Okay, let's change gears for hour number three. And it's great to talk to Preston Dennett under any circumstance, and we've got him tonight. He's back. He is one of the most uniquely gifted and talented and dedicated UFO researchers of all time. He's a great friend of this program, of yours truly, and of the truth. And whatever Preston reports, believe it. He's not just grabbing a rumor and running with it. He is doing his best to research it all the way down to the bottom. Welcome back, Preston.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Always a pleasure.
I don't know what's going on.
I actually tried the same number that Todd was trying, and it said that this call cannot be completed as dialed or something like that. Anyway, so your phone's being blocked. They're playing games. They do this. They've been messing with my email again. They're having fun. Whatever. Anyway, we got you, so this is good. Now, Halloween is gone already, and we're rolling into the holiday season. But before we forget Halloween entirely, you've got a lot of interesting reports and research talking about UFO sightings and encounters and other very high strangeness from graveyards and cemeteries. I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, I mean, who knew this was a thing? But I certainly found out that it actually is very well verified, in fact.
That's great.
Actually comes from... it's very strange and kind of creepy. But a great case comes from J. Allen Hynek, who I think is one of the most respected researchers out there. And he talks about a couple who were driving by a cemetery near their home in Leominster, Massachusetts.
Okay. In Massachusetts. A lot of things happen
right.
In Massachusetts. It's interesting. And New Jersey. Go ahead. It's good.
Oh, yeah. Now, this was a while back, March 8, 1967.
Uh-huh.
But they had just gone out on a drive to look at the newly fallen snow, I believe, and they saw this object hovering over the cemetery. But it was kind of shrouded in this strange fog.
Uh-huh.
So they drove up and seeing it was strange.
How high, Preston? Excuse me for the interruption. How high above the ground was it, approximately?
Very low. Right above it. We're talking like 50 feet.
50. Okay. Rock throwing distance.
Treetop level.
Gotcha.
Exactly. Yep. And it was kind of shrouded in this strange fog, which is not unusual. These craft sometimes have mist or fog swirling around them.
Sure.
But seeing it's unusual, they drive up and they pull off the road. And the guy who was driving steps out of the car and points at it. And this is when things go a little haywire. The car lights, the engine, the radio all go out. And the man's arm is suddenly pinned to the car. And he's temporarily paralyzed. And stays that
his
way for a minute.
His arm is stuck
or two.
To the car? Like it's magnetized to the car? And all right, I get it. And this is nighttime.
I believe so, yeah.
Okay. All right. It sounds like an X-File. All right. Go ahead. Good.
So at this point, he's freaking out, obviously. So is his wife. And this object stays there for just a short while longer and starts making a loud whining noise and takes off. And at this point, of course, the man was released from his paralysis. The car starts up automatically. This object is gone. The mist is clearing. But I am wondering about this incident because why would they paralyze him? Were they doing something that they didn't want to be seen?
Oh, very good question.
That's
very good question.
Yeah.
The only thing missing is that the craft would be painted pumpkin orange. That would have been kind of cute. But anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's quite a few cases. This is just one. And it just
That's wild.
Stranger
See,
and stranger.
Shutting off of all the electronics in the car. Okay. And that's before the age of computer chips in cars. That's 1967. So there's electronics involved, of course. But so they shut it down. His arm was pinned to the car. Now, this is wild. Wild stuff. That's a good one.
Yeah, well, I started digging into this when I kept running across cases. I thought, could this possibly be a pattern growing here? And it absolutely is, because another case comes from Ray Fowler, who you probably heard of him, Betty Andreas.
Oh, I've had Ray on the program a number of times. He was a great one. Another good one. Yeah.
Yeah. One of my favorite researchers out there. Really thorough. And he's uncovered a number of cases. One was really dramatic. October 1964, he interviewed two kids, Robert Cousy and William Chase, who saw this domed disc hovering over a graveyard in Haverhill, Massachusetts.
Again?
So he goes to the police, and the police are like, you know, we've had some problems with grave robbers in this cemetery. we don't know who's doing it. So that was kind of a red flag for Ray Fowler, thinking, could they actually be not only hovering over these graves, but doing something to them?
Did you get any more information about the method of grave robbing? Was there a hole in the ground and no more coffin? Was the coffin opened up after somebody dug it out, or the dirt had been lifted out by whatever means? Did you find anything more about that? What was the grave robbing like? What was going on?
Yeah, I don't know in that case, but there are absolutely other cases that speak more directly to that.
All right, well, we'll get there. Finish this story up. That's a good one. So the cops said we have reports of grave robberies going on. Okay, what else?
Yeah, they've actually staked out the cemetery hoping to find it. Didn't see any UFOs, but that's when Ray Fowler is like, well, you know what? I've got a case where UFOs are hovering over the cemetery. Maybe that's what's going on. So that's kind of where that case lies. I don't know any more about it in particular, but it's the huge. We're talking 20 or 30 cases here.
That's 65. That's almost 60 years. Interesting.
Yeah. I'm still getting new cases, by the way.
Oh, you always will. You're the go-to guy for very unusual material and unusual stories. And these things happen. This world is stranger than most people would ever understand. They're too busy looking at that thing in their hand, or the big screen on the wall, and looking at sci-fi movies, when sci-fi and ETs they're right here. Strange things all the time.
Yeah, I think the biggest case of this kind was reported in a book called West Virginia UFOs by a reporter, Bob Teach. And he writes about these cemeteries, three adjoining cemeteries, Netkin Cemetery, Caldwell Cemetery, and Dean Memorial Cemetery. And he found out that throughout the 1960s and 70s, there were so many sightings over these graveyards that people started to stake them out just to see the UFOs. One watching from their homes, others will go out there and just wait for the UFOs to come. And they found a pattern. They found out that whenever there was someone newly put in the graveyard, this is when they would show up. And in fact, October 8th, 1967, again, this case, for whatever reason, but three people, including a reverend, by the way, saw your kind of classic flying saucer shining down a beam of light on a gravesite that was less than a day old. So maybe that's how they're doing it, because we know they can take people up out of their beds or out of their cars or wherever using a beam of light.
I have another angle. I'll try this one on. Let's assume that E.T. has been here forever. And in order for E.T. to be here and walk amongst us, they have to look like us. Some E.T.s do look like us. We know that. Let's say that they're here and they're shape-shifting into human form enough so they can pass, and they die. Maybe these events are their own people coming to collect the E.T. body from the human cemetery. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's a new one. I haven't heard. You know, I've had a lot of people contact me. Why? Why are they doing this? Maybe it's this, maybe it's that. Because my initial thought was perhaps they're collecting genetics.
Well, I think they don't need to wait for somebody to die to get the genetics. they got, you know, all these mutilated animals, not just cattle. They got horses, dogs, cats, people, all mutilated in the same way. That's genetics. But what if they're shapeshifters and they die unexpectedly or however, and they're buried, and their friends are coming to get the body? Maybe they could even reanimate them. Who knows?
Yeah.
That's another
Well, we have to be open-minded.
Leave it to me
we
for something
know,
weird.
Actually.
That's a weird thought.
It's funny because Scott Corrales is another UFO researcher, also noticed this. He theorized that perhaps they were retrieving implants, which is another thing that, you know, I hadn't thought of that.
Why would they wait for the person to be buried, though? They're laying in a mortuary for a week or 10 days sometimes, and they could easily get them that way. I don't know. Maybe this is... Think about shapeshifters. Yeah. Interesting idea.
All right. I think what would be really interesting to do is see if, you know, some of these people whose graves are being targeted, are they contactees? Do they have a history of UFO encounters?
Very good point. Yes. So, all right.
That might provide some answers.
Well, these are fun.
No, I don't. Yeah, well, here's one which is kind of chilling and certainly really interesting. This occurred at the Mount Pleasant Cemetery in Edmonton, Alberta.
Right.
And the main witnesses are 14-year-old Ricky Banyard and his friend Glenn Coate, who saw this UFO hovering over the Mount Pleasant Cemetery. They described it. They drew it. It looked like kind of two bowls stuck together end to end. And they were watching this thing send down beams of light into the graveyard for a pretty long time. And later, I mean, they reported this, of course, to researchers who went and did an investigation and talked to the cemetery foreman, Joseph LaForge. And he's like, well, yeah, we did find some weird marks in the cemetery. And they inspected it, and they found several unexplained sort of rectangular black streaks on the sand and the gravel paths among the graves. And rocks and pebbles were actually charred. None of the grass or the trees around the area showed any sign of high heat. But where the graves were and the pathways to them, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something going on here. I think one of the weirdest cases.
A lot of possibilities. I mean, if they want implants, they can grab them anytime. I'd like to know.
Something's going on here.
Yes. I'd like to know if the graveyard manager, supervisor, groundskeeper, whatever, if these graves were being actually excavated and the body and or the casket were being lifted up into a craft, if they were gone, or any other disturbance to the ground.
It's a big deal to disinter, is that what they call it, dig up a grave?
Yes.
I know they do it in crimes to determine cause of death that hasn't been, you know, become controversial. But who knows? Maybe one day, but as far as I know, that's never happened. But here, get this case. This is so bizarre. This comes from Jim and Coral Lorenzen, again, great researchers of APRO, the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization.
Uh-huh.
So they interview this lady who owns a funeral parlor because she had a very unusual experience. She said one day her son comes rushing in from the graveyard and said a UFO was hovering overhead. Now, she didn't believe him. She thought he was just joking or, you know, misperceiving or whatever. But it was just a few days later when someone who had been visiting a gravesite rushed in and said he saw a metallic disc hovering overhead. So this is something that's coming not just once, but at least twice, probably more.
Mm-hmm.
But she ran outside. Of course, it was gone by this point. But, man, oh, man, something very strange is going on here.
What were the last two cases year-wise? What year were those? Also 60s? 70s?
That one, I think, was, gosh, that was an early case. Yeah, that was, I think, in the 60s. But there are recent cases. Yeah, that was 67. Got another case in 67. Weird. Yeah, I think the most recent one I found, I'll have to think of that one. I think it was June 2006 when some people were actually ghost hunting at Alt Cemetery in Alt, Colorado, and they actually saw and photographed this object hovering over this graveyard. I've seen the photograph. It looks kind of just like a glowing disc, but it's at treetop level. It's low. And they reported their case to MUFON, which is how I was able to take a look at the photograph. But I think the real clincher is the fact that there's so many of these. And some, it's more than just a sighting, by the way. I mean, there's a couple of cases, well, at least one I know of, involving humanoids. So,
here we know. All right, we're warming
yeah,
up
Yeah, something's going on. Yeah, here's a case, which is an early case, October 9, 1954. Oh, October. Well, there you go. But this is from Jacques Vallée, and this is a worldwide thing. And these cases, there was one in Canada, like I mentioned. This one's in France, in a cemetery, and I'm probably going to butcher this name, but Pornay-la-Chétive in France. And four children were roller skating in the area next to the graveyard. And they saw this round, kind of disc-like object.
Right.
And looking underneath where it was hovering over this graveyard, they saw a very short figure, dark eyes, dressed in kind of this black jumpsuit. And as soon as they saw this little figure, it saw them, and it shined this sort of blinding light at them. From some device, they heard it talking, actually, speaking an unknown language. And as they're looking at it, it retreated to the craft, which took off.
Wow.
I mean, how many cases do we need before, you know, we have to accept that something very strange is going on here?
I agree. This is very interesting. I wish we could get, if you have a chance ever, try to find out if the groundskeeper can report anything about the actual grave sites that may or may not have been hit with a beam of light or whatever, that portion of the cemetery. If they were actually trying to recover remains, it would be obvious, I would think. There would be a hole there.
Yeah, well, maybe not. They're pretty advanced.
Maybe if they put the dirt, they took the dirt out. Or how about if they floated the cadaver right up through the dirt? If they can take him through a roof in a house and a wall, they can take him through dirt. So that's a possible, too. Fun stuff.
I mean, like I said, we cannot rule out anything at this point until we figure out what's going on here. But, yeah, so many cases. I mean, there was one that actually made it into the local newspaper in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the Elmwood Cemetery, when two police officers and a fireman were on patrol on November 4, 1957. So let's see, that's just 3 days after Halloween or so, 4 days. And they saw this glowing egg-shaped object hovering right over the Elmwood Cemetery. And as they approached it, of course, there were electromagnetic effects on their cruiser. Their headlights, their spotlight began to dim and flicker. And as they got real close to it, this object shot upward about 200 feet. So again, it's at real low level and took off. So that's another thing about these cases, is this is not a light up in the sky, you know, flying by. These are absolutely low level. These cemeteries, these graveyards are being targeted specifically.
Hmm.
I mean, there's no doubt about that.
We just don't know what is actually being done. We probably never will. But there's a reason for this.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to figure out, what's going on here. And the cases just keep stacking up. So I still haven't quite figured it out. Seems like there's an element of them showing off a little bit. And perhaps there's something to that. But we do see a lot of cases where UFOs are purposefully being seen. We know they can turn invisible or evade people if they want. Mm-hmm. But they're really brazen in these cases. Come down almost as if they don't care who views them. Not always, but there does seem to be an element of that in some of these cases.
Very good. Very interesting. All right.
Yeah, and all over the world. And here's a case from 1996. Pretty recent. Well, fairly recent. July 15, 1996.
Another graveyard story?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm telling you, there's a lot of them. It's just endless. This case is actually in England. Mm-hmm. And a young man walking to his home by the graveyard saw this yellow object hovering at treetop level. And once again, it's sending down beams of light. And that's significant because that keeps turning up in these cases. These are not just UFOs, you know, hovering. They're doing something. And he fled the area frightened, returned with his father. And this is when they saw that there was, you know, big pieces of wood along the graveyard there had strange 4-inch holes burned right through them. And I'm pretty sure the UFO did it because they were still smoldering at this point.
What now? Burned through? So, I missed it. Burned through what?
These sort of railway pieces, what do you call them? Railroad ties?
Okay, all right.
Big pieces of wood.
I got it. So, and what were these ties just being used for landscape?
You know, it's not really clear in the report.
they're kind of used to make like a flower garden, a little border around it. They'll use them for that. Railroad ties are commonly used in landscape work. Very good.
Yep. But the more I dig into this, the more cases there are. I mean, there's a case from Scott Corrales, who, you know, the Dean Memorial Cemetery is, you know, from the West Virginia case, is the one that really brought this to a lot of people's attention.
Right.
And I'd actually written an article for Fate Magazine about this. And they were all, you know, publishing my articles at the time pretty regularly, but they rejected it. I thought, well, okay, you know, that's odd. I thought this was a good article. But, of course, Fate Magazine came out the next month, and there was an article by Scott Corrales, UFOs Over Graveyards. I'm like, well, shoot, he beat me to the punch. I ended up publishing it in the MUFON Journal because we had different cases. So that's how many there are. But he had one, which was from Brazil, April 5th, 1996, when a mother and son were driving by a graveyard and apparently surprised it. It was so low, they said it nearly hit their car. In fact, it scared him so bad, the mother was hospitalized for trauma. And she really just lost her mind over this.
Hmm.
And it's just one case after another. He cites another case, also in Brazil, Sao Paulo, Brazil, 1989, where there was a grave digger out there in the graveyard doing his job, saw a metallic object come right down very low over the cemetery. Now, he didn't see it doing anything at this point, but he saw it close up. So close, there's no chance of misperception. And again, these are not lights in the sky. These are, in the vast majority of cases, solid metallic craft. So, I'm really, really wondering why they're doing this.
I couldn't even guess. I mean, I've guessed, but that's
my
best guess.
I'm open to theory if anyone's...
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, when it's one thing to hover, but, you know, they land, too. Here's a case from Spain, October 23rd, 1977.
Right.
And this involved two separate witnesses, two couples, who saw a red glowing object actually land at the cemetery. They watched it land, stayed there for just a few moments, and then took off, flew off, at, you know, like they do, high speed. and zip, they're gone. What we need to do, here's what I'm thinking. You know, people are doing all these CE5. That's called down a UFO, going out into the wilderness somewhere and trying to find a location which might attract UFOs. I'm thinking, hey, let's do some CE5s at a cemetery. You know, let's go there after they've put some new graves. I hate to be morbid, but you know, this is something that's going on. This would be a great opportunity for live field work and trying to figure out what exactly is the interest here.
It's a stretch of the imagination. There could be any number of things going on. How long have shapeshifters been amongst us? That would be one of the questions to kind of pose an approach to looking at this, like it's a recovery of one of their own, perhaps. I don't know. That's an odd one. This is very strange. We'll never know unless you get abducted and have a nice conversation with them and they tell you, then you'll know.
Right. Well, we know it's been going on for decades. And here's a case from June 8, 2011. A man in Illinois noticed his dog was acting strange, went outside and saw this UFO hovering right over the graveyard near his home.
Right.
So, you know, if it were one or two cases, I'd be like, okay, coincidence. But when you have like 20 or 30 cases, you have to sort of take them seriously.
That's a pattern.
Yeah. Absolutely. And we know UFOs are attracted to certain areas. For example, Air Force bases or rocket launches.
Any kind of power plant, major power plants,
yep.
Nuclear and
dams,
traditional. Yeah.
Yep. Hydroelectric stations, you name it. In fact, going back to rocket launches, if I looked into that, I'd love looking at UFO attractors, as I call them. There's a lot, you know, 20, 30, 40 cases where they're hovering over rockets being launched. But get this, I found three cases where they come down for people who are launching toy rockets. There was a kid who was part of a toy rocket launch at a school in Montana.
Yeah.
And UFOs came down for that. My father was launching toy rockets for his sons in upstate New York. And after they had launched the third or fourth toy rocket, these discs come swooping down and circling around them and just inspecting what the heck they're doing, launching these little rockets.
Oh, fun.
And this is how close they're watching over us. So,
very good.
Yeah, these are UFO attractors, and graveyards is definitely one. Prisons is another. I could do a whole hour on just cases of UFOs hovering over prisons.
All right. Are they extracting any prisoners?
Yes.
Come on.
Turn up in a few cases.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Jailbreak. Friends in high places.
I'm telling you,
there was a guy missing from his cell, and they put him back. It would be nice if they gave him a little chance of getting away, but no, they put him back in his cell. He got in trouble because he wasn't in there, and the authorities wanted to know where he was.
Uh-huh.
I talked to a guy firsthand, actually, from Canada, who was jailed for marijuana use, and he said he's had ET encounters his whole life, and they came right into his cell.
No kidding.
I don't know.
I've not heard that one before. That's a good one. Right through the bars.
Yeah, I'm still trying to pin down a formal interview with this guy, but yeah, I've got cases of them. I'm seen by the guards as well. You know, not just prisoners, but people around the prisons, the guards, prisoners themselves, walking in the yard there.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely a thing. I mean, photographed in some cases. There was a case over, what's that famous prison in San Francisco area? Isn't that Alcatraz?
Alcatraz.
I forget what it's called.
Well, you have San Quentin.
San Quentin,
That's the one I'm trying to think of.
There's a great case where a guy photographed three or four, really exceptional photographs of this unexplained object hovering over the prison.
Mm-hmm.
So these are what I call UFO attractors. And when I found out graveyards was the one, I'm like, that is beyond bizarre. Why are they doing this? And it's still a mystery that hasn't been solved. But we have enough cases where we should be able to get some idea of what's going on here.
I agree.
But, you know, it's, the main theories are still, you know, E.T. grave robbers, implants being taken. Someone said, maybe they're taking their souls or something. I'm like, well, I don't know. I don't know if there's is a kind of a connection between UFOs and the paranormal. I mean, we know this. And sometimes people have ghostly activity following an encounter. But maybe they're investigating something to do with, you know, spirit activity. And this is something I thought of. I can't really pin down any good, solid reports that would point towards that connection. But again, it's something we have to consider.
For sure. These are good. These are good. This is a definitely a sub-chapter in a book, maybe not a primary, but very good cases.
Yeah, it's very strange. So I'm definitely open to any theories that people might have as to why this would be going on.
Mm-hmm.
There was Raymond Fowler. He's got several cases. There was one that he investigated again in Massachusetts, because that's his home base. But he investigated with Walter Webb in the summer of 1964. Or in Lawrence,
case.
Massachusetts.
Okay. Another Massachusetts.
It's all over the world, I'm telling you. But this was another one that was reported to the police as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there was some really good verification in terms of the witnesses being involved. But it's really the Dean Memorial Cemetery in West Virginia that brought this to the attention of researchers. And when a cemetery is being hit so many times that it's attracting UFO watchers, I mean, how do you explain that?
No. Okay, I wonder what's the deal with Massachusetts. It's 4 or 5, I think.
I think it's due to the thorough research of Ray Fowler, actually.
He lived in New England somewhere. I can't remember where.
Yeah, I don't remember where either, but the fact that he's got so many cases. I mean, this is kind of like the schoolyard cases. There's 100 of those.
Those are also absolutely fascinating. Why children? Why in broad daylight? Right over the playground, right outside.
Yeah. Like I said, broad daylight.
What was the famous one? There was really a super famous schoolyard case. I can't remember that. Was it Australia?
Oh, we're probably talking about the... Oh, there was. Yeah, well, one in Australia was the West Ohio school case.
South Africa, was that it? No, I think it was Australia.
Yeah, there was a huge one. Ariel Elementary School.
That's it.
In Rua, Zimbabwe.
That's it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's another weird sort of attractor. I don't know. They've got their agendas, these ETs. They seem to have an interest in certain areas.
Well,
kind of
by the way,
the schoolyard one.
By the way, Ray Fowler was born in Salem, Massachusetts. So there
oh,
we
really?
Go. Yeah, he's a Massachusetts boy.
Well, that's
a lot of books. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 books, I think. Something like that. Later in life, Ray Fowler wrote about being an abductee himself, sharing this information most in-depth in his autobiographical book, UFO Testament, Anatomy of an Abductee. During an interview with Rosemary Gilley, Fowler listed some of his abduction experience that seemed to correlate with other abductee testimony, such as Betty and Barney Hill and their abduction, and the Betty Andreasen Luca story. That's another one. There have been some really great ones. The younger people now don't know anything about this, unless they're listening to you and reading your books or listening here. These were really big cases. I remember when we started this this program 30 years ago, these cases were still big and hot. Now they've faded away.
Yeah. Well,
thanks to you, they're not fading away completely. So keep it up.
All right,
go ahead.
What
else do we
have?
It is a tough field. Let me ask you one other quick question. We used to have a lot of people writing very interesting books about this whole subject. There don't seem to be as many now, and there certainly don't seem to be the quality of writers and researchers that we used to have. How does it look to you? What's the field like? Because you're a young guy compared to a lot of the folks who've been at it for a long time.
Yeah, well, I miss the classic writers, you know, like John Keel and Kehoe and Edwards, and of course Jim and Cora Lorenzen.
Right.
All of those classic books. And now there's just so much disinformation and misinformation and flat out lies that
doing it in purpose. It's all on purpose.
It's not quite like it used to be.
No. The government is involved with a lot of disinformation, and they're continuing to play their cover up game. It's like we can't figure this out. I don't need the government to tell me anything is real or not. I can figure it out on my own. I'm sure most all of you can too, given enough data. But there's a lot of subterfuge at work. You're right. It's rather disheartening. What was the guy's name? Bob Pratt. I just remembered it. You remember Bob Pratt?
Bob Pratt was
a writer. Yeah, for the National Enquirer, and he then became interested in researching UFO abductions and so forth, and ended up going down to South America, I think Brazil, and into the most remote areas that he could find, and he would have an interpreter with him, and he would ask villagers, I mean, literally out in the middle of nowhere, have you ever seen he'd point up to the sky, you know, a flying disc. He'd show them pictures and things. And invariably, they'd all say, oh, yes, 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 nod their heads, and they would tell their stories. So Bob Pratt did a lot. I can't remember the name of his really good book, but it was a wonderful, total tour of indigenous peoples in South America having ET, UFO experiences all over the place.
Yeah, UFO danger zone.
That was what
I remember the book.
That's it. Yeah. Good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've got a bunch more graveyard cases, but it starts to get a little bit repetitious. It's the same thing over and over again. They're landing there. They're doing their thing. And
tell us a few more. When they land, usually there are some traces left behind. Holes in the ground, whatever.
Yeah. Well,
any
here's a
trace
kind of interesting
case?
One.
Go ahead.
I think I told you the best ones, but here's an interesting one, which occurred at the Canyon Creek burial grounds. Oh, gosh. I'm not sure. I'll have to look up where this was. But it was in December of 1966, and Rob McKinnon, who was a rest area operator, saw this beam of light kind of come down, and he called his family out, and they watched this beam of light come down to the nearby burial ground. And the witnesses all said that huts that were containing the bodies were all brightly lit by the beams. And as the witness said, and I'll just quote him directly, he said, "We definitely had a feeling it was interested in this place. There definitely was something strange happening out there over the cemetery that night." So, It's one case after another.
What lit up, Preston? What lit up and glowed? What was that?
The huts is what he called them. So I guess these are...
Huts?
Yeah, he called them... Yep.
What are these little mausoleums? Or is this in a...
Yeah.
Like a normal cemetery that we would think of? Or is this something more rural and rustic? Because they have small buildings... They call them mausoleums, some people.
Yeah.
Maybe he called them huts. That's odd. All right.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm not sure in that case.
Another one. These are fun.
I think I've gotten pretty much all of them that I wrote down here.
Uh-huh.
I know there's more. But, yeah, that's the majority of them. And I like the cases where, we... In the case from France, from Jacques Vallée, with the humanoid in there, that's unusual. Because this is not just an object. This is not just... I mean, this is more than even a landing. We've got a strange humanoid going on. So, that's, I think, very significant.
Very good. All right. So, what is your next area that you really want to jump into and explore? You've got probably material stacked up for 20 more books, but is there anything that you haven't been able to get to yet, or you find to be... We're not getting abduction cases like we used to, at least not that I know of, and I guess that would be my next question. Are you getting abductee cases and reports that are contemporary right now, not in the way past? Are people still reporting...
No.
That they're being abducted? Because I'm not hearing any. No?
No, not really getting any. I mean, I got one from a year ago where a guy had a gray come into his room. But that was about it. And his is an ongoing case, which, has been occurring his entire life, which is usually the pattern we see. But no, I can't say I've gotten any current cases of people who have been taken on board a craft in the past 2 years. Not a current case.
Well, this jumps right back to David Jacobs and his book called The Threat, where he said that, in his opinion, now he's a, which university is David Jacobs at? Temple? I think it's Temple. Anyway.
That sounds right, yeah.
He said, in his opinion, and he was, the book The Threat was about abductees and human hybrids and shape-shifting, I guess, and all that. He said, in his opinion, that abductions had been going on for a long time, a century, 100 years, whatever. But he came to the conclusion that he felt whatever they are doing or were doing had been virtually finished, and they were no longer going to be doing much by way of abducting people. They had achieved whatever goal they were after. And so this would kind of back that up.
Well, it could be. There could be a number of explanations. I know that it takes people a while to report their encounter for various
reasons.
They don't know who to talk to.
Right, they don't. What do you think about the videos showing news reporters and others on camera allegedly shape-shifting, or they kind of lose their cover and their skin begins to look reptilian and they take on a different configuration? In other words, it's all a mind trick, and sometimes if they're not on their game, they can shift back into their reptilian selves. You've seen these videos, right?
I have, and I'm skeptical. It looks like a number of these are just glitches.
Could be pixelization. Pixelation problems. There could be a lot of reasons. They are odd. But then if you remember that spate of television news people who all of a sudden were just, they couldn't speak anymore. They were talking gibberish. Remember? And they were making sounds that were just not words. And this, to me, was a government test. They were using some weapon system, and rolling it out and testing it on people who were on live TV, and they were kind of under the gun, so you'd really be pressing to do it right and to see if they could mess them up, and they certainly did. That's gone away too now. That was here for 6 months, and then it went away. Anyhow, there's a lot going on out there. It's really crazy. Next book, Preston, what is it? What's it going to be?
Well, working on Not From Here, Volume 5, which is all about the stranger aspects. So I'll have more really bizarre stories for you to talk
Very
about.
Good.
That should be coming out later this year.
Very good. All right, we'll talk to you in next month. Maybe before. We'll see how it goes, whatever you'd like to do. But next month, Preston will be back, and we'll talk then. Thanks for being here.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, good night. All right. Always fun to talk with Preston. So many stories, so many cases. Okay, we will be back in 21 hours. That's just Friday already. All right. Take good care. Prepare and beware. Talk tomorrow.